Zoe, we're gonna record. You gotta be quiet.
Welcome to So Psychological, the podcast where two friends investigate the world of psych.
All the analysis, none of the professionalism.
Welcome to So Psychological. I'm Lizzie Blake, and this is my co-host, Summer Bernoulli.
Shh, I'm blowing through the jasmines in my mind.
You're awesome. Welcome to season one, episode 12, Cloudy with a Chance of Murder.
Murder. So,
shall we jump right in with a summary?
Flashback, we see Henry and Sean sitting in a courtroom during a trial. Henry explains the concept of a jury trial and guides Sean through reading one of the jurors. Back in the present, we see Sean and Gus at the county courthouse trying to get Sean's bike out of the impound, which was impounded for unpaid parking tickets. While there, a lady catches Sean's notice with a simple gesture of picking up some littered trash and placing it in the trash can. This lady, Sean later learns, is accused of the murder of a local weatherman, Jackson Hale. The school mom murderer is Sandra Panich, a teacher new to Santa Barbara. When Sean sees her attorney on the evening news, he thinks he must intervene. Sean shows up at the trial the next day and casually and authoritatively adjusts attorney Adam Hornstock's appearance. Hornstock notices the change in the jury's attitude towards him and accepts Sean and Gus's help on the case.
It's a pretty amazing tie.
It's a Thomas Pink tie.
Yeah.
The judge wants to know why Sean is there as well and asks Carlton to vouch for him. And Carlton does, saying absolutely, when asked if Sean has been helpful. Sean then also wins over the judge by psychically reading his kidney stones and offering advice. Sean and Gus are allowed to visit the crime scene where we are treated to a glimpse of news anchor Gus. And Sean picks up on some subtle clues, including Reuben Leonard's jealousy of Jackson Hale's career and Priscilla's jealousy of all the women who swoon over Hale. At the trial, we watch as Hornstock kind of bails on questioning Priscilla and then almost bails on questioning Leonard as well until Sean presses him. Leonard admits to hating Hale and saying Hale should have been stabbed in the heart long ago. Outside the courtroom, Sean and Gus run into Carlton and Jules, where Jules tells Sean he's missing something really big and that he could learn something about Carlton. When she turns away, she accidentally drops a note showing a memo was sent from Carlton to the district attorney. But despite having been through the evidence, Sean hasn't seen this memo. While Carlton is on the stand testifying, Sean asks Hornstock to question him about the memo. Carlton says the memo was calling into question the motive of Sandra Panich and that he didn't think she had one. Sean and Hornstock think they've won the case. That is until the DA introduces a videotape of the murder showing Sandra Panich, Jackson Hale, and no one else. Henry tells Sean crimes of passion are usually about revenge or sometimes even hatred, and then subtly admits to being behind Sean's bike being impounded. At this point, Sean goes back to the psych office and watches the tape over and over until he falls asleep. When Gus wakes him to go to the trial, Sean finally sees what is on the tape, a cloud that is Priscilla's shadow, hitting Sandra over the head and killing Hale, wrapping up the trial in the most Perry Mason way possible. As the episode wraps up, we see Sean and Gus arrive at the police station to get Sean's bike out of auction. We also see Henry and Hornstock arrived to do the same as well, only to discover that the bike was taken out of impound internally And then then Carlton walks through.
What are you looking at? Go home.
So one of the things that I wanted to talk about in this episode was we see Adam Hornstock say to Sean, he was like, I just don't have the support system that you have. And Sean seems to be really taken off guard by this. Like, I have a support system?
You know, like he's used to kind of being the support. We saw they really rallied around Lassie, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's looking at Hornstock here, and Hornstock is someone who knows what it's like to not have anybody. I mean, his own family is his firm. So it's not even like his firm is rejecting him. It's his family rejecting him.
Yes.
You know, in his skills as this. So he's like got this huge level of awareness of being out there on your own and just having to kind of fight to keep your head above water. So he is really going to notice what's really happening with Sean, which, you know, Sean doesn't realize because Sean is, well, one, he's focused a lot of times on doing all the stuff in a way for the other people, but also because he's in his own little world when it comes to himself and what he perceives he needs and things like that.
Yeah. So Sean turns around and he sees his dad after Hornstock makes that comment, you know, you have such a great support system and your dad, it's your first time in court and your dad's already here to support you. And we see the camera show Henry and he smiles and waves and he looks very supportive. He looks like a
parent at one of those like kids recitals.
Like, hey, I'm watching you. And of course, Sean believes that Henry's motives are like to be the dad who's there to make sure he doesn't do anything wrong. But we don't see Henry engage in that until he goes on the defensive. Sean pushes him into that defensive mode. And that's when Henry goes, whose name do you represent?
He says that multiple times through. So you're seeing this from Sean's side. But really, if we sit back and look, like you said, Henry doesn't seem to have that attitude until
he's put on the defensive.
And in which case he's automatically going to be guard up because he's still figuring this thing out too, you know, how to be a good parent that connects in a human way.
Yeah. And so I think where this is revealed the most that Sean has this amazing support system is in that last scene there where Sean and Gus and Henry and Hornstock are all there to help Sean get his bike out of the auction.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, that it was taken out, quote, internally and really led to believe that Carlton is the one behind the bike being out internally, which there's just so much in that for me. Like, there's just so much in that for me. Like, when Juliet goes to Sean and she says, you're missing something huge that's right in front of your face. And you're psychic. You should see this. And
yeah.
And there's something there. You could learn something about Carlton. Is what she says to him. And I think what she's alluding to is that Carlton is like, he's arrested Sandra Panitch, yes, because that's where the law is, that's where the evidence is, but he does not really believe that she committed this crime. I mean, I feel like you can see that on him throughout the episode.
Yeah, he's like very relieved when the memo is brought up in court.
He does seem to be. Well, and even the fact that he admits that Sean is helpful. Like, Carlton works inside the bounds of the legal system and the law, and he knows that Sean can work a little bit outside that, and that Sean sees things in different ways, and that
both
justice
frustrate him to no end.
Oh, to no end. But that justice motivator inside Carlton, I don't think Carlton could allow himself to be okay if Sandra Panitch had gone to prison when Carlton didn't believe that she was guilty. I think the justice drive in him would have continued to gnaw at that.
Yeah, that sense of justice, you know, he wants to see it done right. So he's going to do everything by the book, like you said. But unfortunately, by the book, with what little information they had, is putting Sandra in prison. So he is very frustrated with that. So we see, though, his reluctance almost in saying yes to the judge. Absolutely, this person is helpful. But his sense of justice and his desire for what is right is going to be stronger than his annoyance with Sean's ways.
And I think the same kind of thing. You see this annoyance, but you also see a little bit of relief in Carlton in that moment that he's like, there's a little bit of snide in that, absolutely. And there's a little bit of, oh, yes, actually he is helpful and he can help on this case. Yes.
Yeah, because Carlton knows that Sean is persistent and is going to probably aggravate everybody along the way, but he's not going to give up.
Yeah, that Sean will do what Sean does to get to the truth, to create justice for this murder. And I think a lot of that plays in that last scene. But Carlton, much like in the episode where everybody rallied around Carlton and they didn't want Carlton to know, I think a lot of that is flipped here on its head, as Carlton has really been given peace of mind by Sean, and he wants to rally around Sean and get his bike out of impound without anybody knowing that he did it.
Right, of course.
Right? Like, we, the audience, we don't even know for sure that Carlton did it, but that's definitely the impression that you get.
They definitely implied it, and they implied it through his own discomfort.
Yes.
You know, because in that final sense, when he's saying, what are you looking at? He could just be like, what are you looking at? Go home. Like, why are you all still here? What's happening? Why is this bike in the police station? Get it out, you know?
Exactly.
But he's avoiding. And so we know that he did that. So he's doing a thank you, but of course he can't quite admit it publicly.
And then we see, you know, also we get to see Henry has shown up to get the bike out of the auction. And which is, you know, I'm kind of going to look at it as a parent. Like, if my kid got in an accident on a motorcycle, I don't know that I would go so far as to like call the meter maid and be like, hey, my kid's parked too close to the fire hydrant. I don't think I would do that, but I would definitely want my kid off of that motorcycle, you know, just as a parent wanting to protect your kid. Now, granted, Sean's an adult.
Yeah, I mean, but like, he thinks that Henry's trying to control him again, as always, like why he's in the courtroom again. I'm representing you. I'm representing you on the road. I'm representing you everywhere. I know it's all about you, Dad, kind of thing. And really frustrated that he is not being like let free, and that he's under this watchful eye, which he's seeing as like the evil eye of the monitor waiting for him to mess up. But actually, again, like we've talked about before, if they would recognize the motivation.
Yes.
His dad is actually just upset because he didn't want to see him in a wreck again, which, yeah, you know, the last time Sean didn't even tell him he was in a wreck.
No.
The van ran him off the road.
His dad is coming from almost a place of just fear. Like, what, you know, I don't want to see something bad happen to my kid. As a parent, that's like such a fear. And hopefully it's not a fear that, you know, encourages parents to do maybe some unethical things, like call meter maids.
Yeah.
But, you know, but it is a legitimate fear.
But like you said, I mean, Sean is an adult.
Yes.
And he's been living irresponsibly in Henry's mind, but still somehow successfully alive.
Yeah.
Capable to take care of himself in some form as an adult. And at some point, we have to let them be whoever they are, making those mistakes or not mistakes, or just being the way they are, and just have to, like, I don't know, clench your hands at night and hoping that they're okay rather than calling the meter maid.
Exactly. And so I find it just very beautiful that Henry is there to get the bike out of the auction, the impound auction, because to me, that's a step of Henry saying, okay, I'm actually a little bit responsible for this, even though Sean is responsible for parking too close to the fire hydrant. Henry is taking a part in his responsibility. I'm actually a little bit responsible for your bike being an impound. So I'm here to honor mm-hmm. you as an adult, as somebody who actually is doing a really good job at adulting in this new job as a fake psychic detective. Henry's here to show that.
Yeah, because you get that sense that it's not just about him taking responsibility for his part in the tickets, but it really is about him. You know what? I want to do something nice because you know what? You actually have done a good job. And it comes back to that first scene you talked about with Henry where he was in the courtroom waving his hand like, hey, you know, and here his kid has done this. It's like, okay, here's the ice cream. I'm going to take you, or I should have taken you out for without question, you know, except in this case, it's de-impounding his motorbike. Yeah.
And then we have Hornstock. Hornstock shows up and he is now so, so happy to be experiencing some level of support system from his family. They have to get wider doors because it's Hornstock, 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 Biederman, and Hornstock. And he's been promoted to partner. He's actually being acknowledged as a good, skilled attorney that he also wants to support and rally around Sean and get the bike because he knows what he owes Sean.
Yeah, because for him, it's not even about getting partner. It's getting finally at least a little bit of acknowledgement that, yes, I'm a part of this family.
Yes. I think it has a lot more to do with his name being with their names than his name actually being on the door as a partner.
Right. Which is kind of funny because here's one of those other really kind of subtle juxtapositions where it's about, you know, the name and who are you representing when you're out there?
Yes. Because his name is on the door. It just doesn't mean him.
Yeah.
The name on the door that is Hornstock.
Recognizing him.
Yeah.
Is not him.
The Hornstock on the door does not represent Adam Hornstock. It represents.
And they're not letting Adam
his dad and his brother
represent him. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's very, very true.
Like they've all turned his back on him. You know, like he's like, they won't even help. They want anything. So it's like, you know, they're leaving him just to kind of lose a case to almost like prove their own misconceptions about him. So it's like by him not being a partner, it's less about him being a partner, but it's almost like stripping him of his name because it's like, he doesn't represent us. We're the other Hornstocks. And so you get that interesting parallel about like that representation of your family and what that looks like, where he's desperate to be able to do that. And Sean is really rebelling against that. Not saying one is right or wrong, you know, like, because both situations are very complex and have a lot more going on. But that is an interesting, subtle parallel happening here, as well as the recognizing the support systems.
Yeah, how drastically different the way like Hornstock views his community, the way Sean views his community, but also how their communities view them is very, very much an overriding theme in this episode.
Well, and because even Hornstock, because he hasn't had that support, you see it when they're in the interrogation room after the video has been released and he's convincing her to take the plea. And Sean's like, no, don't do it. And he says, wait, I thought you were on my side. Because he's never had that support, he's having that misunderstanding of what being on your side means. And Sean has to explain, no, this is what it means. I'm on your side because I believe in this and I know you can do it. And I'm going to help you get there.
Yes.
And teaches them kind of that healthier, this is what this can be like. And I think that's really where we get some of that appreciation from Hornstock in the end with the motorbike too, because he's not just won a case, he's won acceptance with his family, but also I think he's kind of seen a bigger picture of what that looks like.
Of what it looks like, support system. Because sometimes your support system is going to push back a little bit when you might not be making the best choices.
Yeah.
Fun, fun, fun.
Fact, fact, fact. Fun fact. So in this episode, Hornstock claims that Leonard is not a real meteorologist name because Leonard isn't a term for any kind of weather.
Because that's the qualifications for a good weatherman, is a good weather name.
Exactly. So I made a little list of the real weatherman names from this episode. I also included outtakes from this episode. So here we go. Bolt Lightning, Cloudy McMillan, Windy Morning Dew, Bill Bright Outside, Tornado Tetterman, Sleet Ulrich.
I love that one.
Radar Doppler, Muggy Mathers, Windy Cloudcakes, and Humid Hernandez. They used two real meteorologists, real weatherman names in this
like
episode.
In real life, not...
Yes, like double real. Like they're real names, but Psych would
so
also
these aren't real
classify
from the
them
script,
as
but
real
like
names.
Real people.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
So Johnny Mountain and Dallas Rains were both meteorologists out of Los Angeles. Johnny Mountain, however, has retired since this episode aired in 2010.
But he was current during this. That's really cool.
Yes, they both would have been like on-air actual meteorologists during the time that
in
this
California.
Episode appeared.
Brilliant.
Yeah, in LA. So I took to Google. I wanted to know if there were more real weatherman names. And here's what I found. Ray-Ban was a weatherman who has since retired from the Weather Channel.
Like just Ray-Ban, nothing else. Oh, I guess like Ray-Ban. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, like the sunglasses. But Ray, like
yeah, but,
rays of sunbeams.
But like Ray, the name. Yeah, it took me a minute.
Amy Fries is a meteorologist out of New York. Larry Sprinkle is out of Charlotte, North Carolina. Ken Weathers is out of Knoxville, Tennessee. Storm E. Field is out of New York. Now, I will say Storm is Elliot Field's nickname, but the Storm E. Field, I mean, that's just, that's real. That's real weatherman criteria right there.
That's, yeah.
Sunny House is from Minneapolis. Stormy Rotterman is from Colorado. And I did find this one, while not an actual weather phenomenon, there is a meteorologist named Topper Shutt in Washington, D.C.
That's a great name.
So,
that's a great name.
So poor Leonard is like not a meteorologist because he's weatherless. So I decided to declare a weather phenomenon for him. So Leo means lion.
Lion,
right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now nard is a Sanskrit word or comes from a Sanskrit word that actually means plant. From heretofore, henceforth, we shall refer to, like a lion, a roaring wind that blows over any outdoor potted plants as a Leonard. So Leonard
so like
can,
a garden wind, a roaring garden breeze.
So Leonard is now a real weatherman, thanks to us.
I guess it's a good thing he didn't kill anyone. Because now he can continue on with the real name and
yes.
actually make it on screen, on air.
On air. You're welcome. You're welcome, Reuben Leonard. The So Psychological Ladies, we're here for you.
We got you covered.
Like an umbrella.
All right. So one of the things I loved about this episode is like we really, you know, we always get to see their skill sets on display. But there is something a little different happening in this episode. And I want to start with Sean. Because we see how Sean has all these abilities. And Henry has taught him. And in every episode, we see him using these. and we see the little highlight flash, and we get to see the clues that in the way that he sees them in ways others don't. But in this particular episode, because he's having to help Hornstock, we actually see him have to teach Hornstock the reasoning behind it. And so we get this interesting little thing where, you know, we've seen all the flashbacks, Henry teaching this to Sean. And, you know, Sean now as an adult is always reluctant and complaining about his dad, you know, forcing this on him. But he does use these skills, and this is a major part of who he is. And now here, when it's his turn to help, instead of just telling Hornstock what to do, he shows him why. And I think that's really great because, one, it teaches us more about Sean's abilities.
Special gift.
And also, yeah, his this and that. And, but it also then shows that reasoning that he has, and he's how he's helping somebody else. And so in some ways, he is doing exactly what his father always wanted him to do, which is be like him. And we see that here with Hornstock. And we see it first happen in that scene where they're in the courtroom and he has him change the tie. He shows him what it is about the jurors and why what he needs to change would work. And that helps build Hornstock's confidence. As a result, then Sean is able to go and do more.
I'm thinking like the importance of the why. Instead of just telling somebody what to do, explaining why actually impacts that. Instead of him just saying, let's change your tie, Hornstock actually gets impacted. It changes something about Hornstock to know why that's going to work.
Yeah, because what he's doing is he's setting Hornstock up for future success.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what's helping build some of that confidence is, oh, I can do this. Oh, there's our little things. And I see that. Oh, what he's saying, I can see and I can do.
So that creates that where Hornstock can actually see that the jury's impression of him is changing because he knows what he's looking for.
Yeah. And so that gives him further confidence to press on into the case. And then now it also allows him to accept Sean and Gus into his team. And, but not just accept them, hoping that they do the work for him, but as a partner where, yes, we can do this.
Yeah. That Hornstock becomes part of, he becomes part of their team and they become part of his team during this entire episode. It's kind of cool.
So I think that's really fun to see Sean's skills, not just shine in catching the criminal, but also you see it in that final bit because he gets him to that point. He's up there questioning. He jumps in.
Yeah.
And he's questioning. But right at the critical moment, he pulls back and lets Hornstock go forth with everything he just taught him.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the things that Sean does so well is he'll lay the groundwork for somebody and then give them the opportunity to step in and do what they're supposed to be doing. I think that's part of what makes him such a great protagonist to watch.
Yeah, because there are many times when he really just wants, you know, he gets really upset when somebody else steals his thunder and he can't be the one who puts that final bit out there. But in these cases, when he's really there to support someone, he makes sure that they're the ones that get that final bit, like we saw with Lassie last week, like we're seeing with Hornstock this week. And then the fact that he taught him like Henry did, he's setting Hornstock up for future, the ability to continue to grow in his skills.
Yeah, he's setting him up for future successes, for hopefully more big wins to come.
Which and now he'll actually have because now he can get those cases being partner. And I thought that was just really cool to not just see the skills of Sean, but have him lay it out. And I love it because he's laying it out exactly as his father did. And so in so many ways, he is fulfilling all his father's wishes, just not behind a badge.
He's fulfilling his dad's.
Yeah, but I wonder like how Henry would have felt if he would have heard that conversation. I mean, actually, at this point in their relationship, Henry might be, oh, so you listened. I'm glad. But and I have a little bit of snideness to it. I think the fact that he did take it in and the fact that he's now able to teach, that's that good aspect of Henry that he also possesses that he is now sharing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also wanted to talk about Gus, because Gus has incredible skill sets as well.
And absolutely.
He always has these like niche interests that help the case in some bizarre way.
Don't be preposterous. I'm nobody's sidekick, you pompous boop.
Exactly. He has his own stuff to bring to the table, and he's done it many times with the key bit that allows the case to be solved, even.
Yeah. And that's when he's doing the Anchorman moment. He's like, local pharmaceuticals rep gets big clue to solve the case that baffled police. Like, that's his own narrative too, is that he's the hero in this story. He knows what he brings to the table.
And what I love about the things he brings to the table, not only are oftentimes they absurd and bizarre.
Yes.
The grammar was probably crazy in that sentence, but that's okay. But he goes full in. So the thing I love about Gus and his skill set, where we saw Sean is now teaching the way his dad taught him. Gus, whatever he does to fullness.
Yes.
So no matter what he does, whether it be the safe cracking or his pharmaceutical sales, he's going to know all the details. He's going to know all the things. You know, here, it was only a sixth grade law class, but it was
accelerated.
Yes. but his interest, he's like, oh, we're doing this law thing. So all of a sudden, he's totally in it.
He's immersed in it.
He's going to go from start to finish. This is what we do. Just like you said, in the Anchorman position, this is what they do from start to finish. They do the warm-up exercises, blah, 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 blah,
blah, blah, blah, blah, blah.
And, you know, he gets that posture. He's full on serious. On one hand, it's a role he's taking, but on the other hand, he's very aware of things. And so like with the law, he had an interest at some point. And so he's pulling from that interest and he's going full in. What does he know from all the TV shows he watches, from everything? So we get to the point where he even like in the interrogation room, you see he's holding a law book. He's not even talking, but he's already doing research.
Yeah. And that's, I'm just thinking like he's such a rules and law and order and structure person that all of this is just going to make so much sense in his head that once he sees a precedent for something, which is how many of our laws are created here in the US, that it's going to make sense, that this is how it works. This is what flows next. And these are the rules and why they're in place. And Gus is going to be the one that's going to say, I know the rules and I know why they're in place and I know how to use them. That's just
and with confidence. Because he actually steps up, actually, Judge, actually, Your Honor,
mm-hmm.
You know.
He was pre-law.
Like, technically, he shouldn't have to have any right to be in the position where he was. But, I mean, I guess he could because of the precedent he found. But he's bold enough to say, I've done the study. I know I can go with this. And I'm a part of this team now. So this is what we do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he always comes in with those key pieces of evidence in that last minute that always enables Sean to help solve the crime, figure that last piece out. And in this case, it's the very thing, because without him presenting that, Sean can't jump up to do what he does to then escort Hornstock up to do what he does and close the case finally.
Yes.
Get the confession, get the case thrown out, you know, mm-hmm. all of that stuff. And he does it because he's just so invested.
Yes. Which that only ever happens in Perry Mason episodes. So I'm like, I'm so in love with this episode, with that nod to Perry Mason in that where everything gets turned over in the courtroom and take the witness into custody. And
I don't know. Matlock might have something to say about that too.
Did that happen in Matlock too?
I don't know, but I'm sure it did. It had to have, right?
Okay. I do know that is very much a Perry Mason trope.
Totally.
Love it.
But that whole idea of not just approving, not just having to defy the reasonable doubt, but to also like get the full confession and find the killer and all of that. Yeah. Totally a TV law type move.
And I just would like to acknowledge how much Gus is right in that Anchorman moment where he says, local pharmaceutical salesman uncovers key piece of evidence. He is the one that uncovers the key piece of evidence in so many of these episodes, man.
But I think in a lot of the episodes, we see him spouting out the knowledge, all of this incredible like wealth of bizarre knowledge he has, but we don't always see how he gets there.
Yeah.
But in this case, we see from the beginning to the end, this process of, oh, we're doing law. I'm going to jump in. We see him studying the books. We see him doing the work and coming out at the end with that way to allow Sean to step forward, to allow Hornstock to do his thing.
Yes.
And I just think it's really cool how we get to see, especially in a, or in a law courtroom type episode, to see the process of that, you know?
Yeah.
Because so much of law is process.
It's very tedious.
And so I think those things are really cool, the way we get to see the explanation and even development of those skills that they possess, and not just the on the surface use of them. Susie's nodding her head because she agrees.
I do agree.
So, Susie.
So, Lizzie.
I thought it would be nice to mention a few things about Michael Weston.
Yeah, he's a burned spy.
No. Not that Michael Weston.
But the real Michael Weston.
The real Michael Weston, who's an actor who plays Adam Hornstock in this episode. Now, he just all around seems to be a really nice guy, and he loves actors. He respects them and the craft, and he is also respected and loved in turn. And so I thought I'd share a few little tidbits about him, because maybe people recognized his face a few different places. The place he's most commonly known for is he actually played a private investigator, not a psychic one, but a private investigator on the series House with Hugh Laurie.
Mm-hmm.
And so most people are familiar with that, but many people have seen him because he's played in guest spots on so many different shows.
He's been on like everything, it seems like.
Right. Well, Psych was not his first time to meet James Rodriguez. In fact, he met him on the set of a movie called The Dukes of Hazzard back in 2005.
Wow. I have not seen that movie.
I will be honest, I also have not seen that movie.
Now, we did watch the show, The Dukes of Hazzard.
Right, back in the day.
Back
but
in the day.
It came out with Jessica Simpson. It had Burt Reynolds as Boss Hogg. Well, he actually played the deputy. He played Enos. So that was his role. And Rodet was in that film as well. So that was the place where they first met. And they instantly became friends. Now, he is actually also known for being very, very close friends with Zach Braff. And so he was in Garden State in 2004 with Zach Braff. He also did some episodes of Scrubs with Zach. Mm-hmm. He was in, I think, a film called Last Kiss. So he's done many things. So he seems to be the kind of guy who makes good, solid friendships, and they're able to do multiple projects together. And such is the case with James Rodet Rodriguez and eventually Dulé Hill, because they met back on the set of Dukes of Hazzard, and that was in 2005. Well, then he was on this episode of Psych, and then he went on to be cast in a play, because he actually really, like I said, he enjoys the craft, so he's going to do a lot of stage work as well. And so he and Rodet were both cast in a play in 2010 called Extinction.
It was co-produced by Dulé Hill, and it performed off-Broadway very successfully. And then he went, and then when Rodé went on to film his or direct his own comedy horror movie called Gravy in 2015, of course, who's going to star?
Adam Hortstock. Michael Weston.
Michael Weston stars.
I will say he takes on these roles, but he's so believable in each one of these roles. Like, it is kind of funny that I just called him Adam Hornstock, but that's because in this episode,
that's who he is. And if you see him in the other stuff, it's his face is familiar, but you're not thinking of him as a different character because he's so in it.
Yes, like he inhabits the characters that he acts.
Now, that film that Rodé directed, it also had, that called Gravy, it also had like Jimmy Simpson in it. It featured Tears for Fears on the soundtrack. You know, a lot of crossover. Mm-hmm. So both, I get the sense that both he and James are the kind of guys who build those relationships and are able to continuously work together. And so he did those multiple projects with them. But still more crossover to be found. If you look at his filmography, he actually, one of his first roles was in a movie called Coyote Ugly.
Oh.
Now, Coyote Ugly featured a young Piper Perabo who later went on to be on a show called Covert Affairs, which was on
USA
Network. That was his first connection with USA Network. He also went on to play opposite Michael Weston, the Bourne spy, in an episode of Burn Notice, also yes. on USA Network.
What he was brilliant in that role.
He also was in an episode of Monk
uh-huh.
on USA Network, and that was before Psych. And so, like, he's had all these... He hasn't been on every USA show, but, I mean, he did pretty well for that. He was on White Collar in 2012. So, you know, awesome. Just ticking all the boxes, like most guests of Psych, because it films in Vancouver, there's a lot of crossover of actors with different shows that film there. So like many guest actors of Psych, he also was in an episode of Supernatural. Just a lot of fun things. He was more recently in 2016, he was the main star of a TV miniseries called Houdini and Doyle, where he played Harry Houdini. And one of the interesting things about this is he's so into his role. I wouldn't say he's method, but he really likes trying new things as mm-hmm. an actor, he said in one of his interviews. And so he actually performed all the stunts, his own stunts as Harry Houdini, which included doing those magic tricks where he's like submerged in water and locked and dipped again and again and again. And he did say that one of those tricks was, he said he knew that the guys were there in case something went wrong, but because he was actually going through it and it was so intense, it was one of the moments that he was very scared. But I mean, kudos to him for following through on that. More recently, he's been on an episode, he's seven episodes, in fact, of A Million Little Things. Again,
with James Rodé Rodriguez.
James Rodé Rodriguez. So he's got a really interesting kind of filmography, so to speak. And I just love it.
Yeah, it's not even really 6 degrees of Psych. It's like James Rodé Rodriguez, Dulé Hill, and well, I'm going to rephrase it. It's not even like it's 6 degrees of Psych. It's like James Rodé Rodriguez and Dulé Hill make friends and keep them around them for all of their future projects.
Right. And it seems like Michael Weston is also this kind of guy.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's a that makes natural sense that they would just click together, you know. His original name is Michael Rubenstein. Like many actors, of course, he changed that and gave us the great Michael Weston that is not a Bourne spy. And then the last detail, of course, is he made TV history. he's in the episode of the one episode of a TV show that has ever remade itself. At least it's the first. I don't know of any that have done it since, but it's definitely the first. And he plays Adam Hornstock again
in
when it is
remade. Both.
In both. And he did say that coming back for the second episode was like coming back to family. And one of the things that he loved so much about it was that it was, there was so much trust for the actors to be allowed to do their own thing, to kind of be free to improvise and actually work and develop their craft even while on camera. And that's why we love being a part of Psych Family. My name is Michael Weston. I was an actor on stage and screen. I was not burnt because my friends care about me and recast me again and again. Wrap up, and you know, no pressure and all, but what are your favorite highs and lows from this episode?
My high from this episode is, of course, the weatherman names.
Yeah, like those are classic.
You can just put all those in your pocket and carry them around with you all day, and you just can be a happy little camper.
Absolutely.
Bill Bright outside. And my low, I think one of the things that I see as like a weaker spot in this episode is what I hit on in one of the talking points that we talked about was Juliet. It almost seems like an offhand comment that Juliet says, there's something you could learn about Carlton. And although that's not quite exactly what she says, but I think if you're just watching it in passing, like what Carlton is doing, it's not highlighted.
Yeah.
Quite strongly enough for me in this episode. Because right. It's a good, strong Carlton episode.
It is in a different way. Yeah.
Yeah.
I ask about the lows because of course we know this episode is the one that the creators decided to remake when they were able to do an homage to remakes.
Mm-hmm.
And they said it wasn't that they didn't like it, but that there were just some things that they felt could be better. And for me, I don't think this Milo is enough to justify a remake, but I really would like to know what was going on with Adam Hornstock's hair.
Oh.
Because, like, he gave him a nice tie and he fixed him up that way, but could he not also maybe give him a comb?
Well, he says nice shag when he's
yeah. I mean, I'm
doing his evaluation.
I know it was an era for sometimes floppy hair, but I don't know if that quite warrants a remake. But I was glad to see it different in the remake, as I'll just say that. Now, a high for me in this particular episode was I really loved the fact that they got to play with two different strong fields for references, both the law and the courtroom trope and all of the weather-related things, instead of just being like,
so instead of cloudy with a chance of murder, yours would be sunny with a high of double references.
Double references, yes, just as long as it's not double jeopardy.
Yeah, they do actually commit double jeopardy and when they make the remake.
Shh, we won't tell because they kind of go back in time. They're going to go back in time. All right, so... So the only other thing I wanted to mention in this that I just thought was funny, and it's a tiny little detail that is not enough to talk about, but I still wanted to mention it. You know, he mentions that asparagus is good for kidney stones. Later you see the judge eating asparagus as a snack. That asparagus is raw. Do people eat raw asparagus?
I do.
Do you?
Yeah.
I love asparagus, but I only ever have it cooked. I've never had it raw.
Yeah, at my husband's grandma's, we would go pick it out of the garden and wash it off and eat it.
Is it not woody and fibrous?
It is fibrous, but it has like a snap to it.
Okay, so I guess I'm the odd one here. I thought it was very strange that he was eating raw asparagus.
I am an asparagus lover as well. One of my favorite asparagus times, we always, when we'd grill, we would grill a big bundle of asparagus with our dinner. And we didn't have asparagus one time when we were grilling. And one of our sons came in and said, "Where's that really gross green stuff that's really yummy when you put it on the grill?"
Classic. But let's get on to favorite quotes.
My favorite quote, I'm going to have to go, is when Sean is evaluating Adam Hornstock and he says, you know, "Twirl it up for me and then twirl it right back." That's just, it's such a good, useful quote. Like anytime you need something, you can just twirl it up for me and twirl it right back.
There you go. My favorite was the first time that Gus mentioned his pre-law program, which is with Sean and Hornstock. And he says, he was pre-law once. And Sean says, no, you weren't, right? And Gus says, "Well, I was pre-law, sixth grade, but it was an accelerated program."
It was an accelerated program.
"I won a mock trial of tortoise versus hare." And of course, later when the judge comes back, he throws that of, "It's an accelerated program again." But I just love that he even throws his win. And the one thing, you know, we talked about Gus being full in, but also it's like when he remembers his childhood triumphs, even as an adult, he remembers them as if they're now an adult triumph.
Mm-hmm.
Like he remembers them in the same way he did as a child, but now as an adult. And I think, I mean, of course, who wouldn't be proud of winning over the tortoise and the hare?
I also adore the scene where they're in the judge's chamber and the prosecutor says something like, "Why are you allowed in here? This psychic and his sidekick. And Gus is like, "I'm nobody's sidekick." And he gets all riled up and you're like, it's so funny.
Yeah. They're just so good. All right. So that's all for our episode today. We hope that if you have a weather name for yourself or you can think of one, won't you share it with us through our social media? You can always email us
at susieandlizzie@gmail.com. That's SUSIEANDLIZZIE@gmail.com.
You can also contact us at Twitter at
Susie and Lizzie.
You can contact us on Instagram
at So Psychological
and Facebook
at So Psychological.
So we hope that you will choose one of these mediums to reach us and let us know your preferred weather name.
And I'd like to know if you guys think that Carlton is the one that got the bike out of the auction, or if you think that maybe something else was at play.
Anyway, we shall talk to you next week. Have a great week, and we'll see you again.
This has been So Psychological. You've heard it both ways.
I hear that.